Okay, members, should we make a start? This seems like a very long agenda, but I don't think there's anything that's terribly controversial in most of it, so hopefully we can execute it fairly efficiently. Chairman's notices, there are none other than me drawing your attention to what's on page 5. Apologies for absence.
Sorry. Yes, apologies from Councillor Mrs. Thompson.
Okay. Disclosure of interest to disclose the existence. Sorry, minutes of the last meeting, even. I'm missing out item 3. Are those agreed? No. Councillor Hurd.
Just on page 8, just a typo. The second from last paragraph, and it's the fifth line down, we've got Councillor Flukowicz. Yes. Has a ring to it. Second paragraph from the bottom. Refer to the proposal in the name of Councillor Flukowicz.
Yep. Good spot. With that amendment, are those minutes agreed?
Agreed.
Excellent. Disclosure of interest to disclose the existence and nature of any disclosable pecuniary interest, other pecuniary interest, or non-pecuniary interest relating to items of business on the agenda, having regard to paragraphs 6 to 8, inclusive of the Code of Conduct for Members. I disclose at this point that I'm Managing Director of Goldman Sachs, and so I'll step out for item 11, and the Vice Chairman will take that item. Any others? No? Excellent. Public participation, there is none. So we go straight into Corporate Health and Safety on page 13.
Thank you, Chair. So, Corporate Health and Safety, page 13 to 18. This is a report to be noted. It details the statistics and the progress against the action plan. There have been 5 accidents, one of which is HSE reportable. This took place during the closure of the Smoke and Fire Festival, and police are investigating this. There have been 13 reports of unacceptable behaviour, which is a significant increase, 8 of which took place in customer services. We're going to monitor these, and we'll report back specifically on this to the committee if this high level continues. We just need to understand whether it's just a blip. Work on the action plan is continuing, and the work that's been carried out in the last quarter is highlighted in bold. Happy to take any questions.
Councillor Hurd.
Thank you, Chairman. 3.2, 13 incidents of unacceptable behaviour. As you said, there is a significant increase in this. And I'm generally concerned when I hear about this a significant increase in something of this. And I'm wondering whether or not we should be doing a press release to say that it has been noted and that we'll be looking at this kind of thing, because why should the employees of this authority be subjected to that? I mean, if other members think that perhaps it should be just monitored, but if there is another increase, I think that this is something that we should say is unacceptable and find out what any sanctions are, if any.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know whether a press release will actually get the message out to the right people. I think that's one question that we have to ask. But, I mean, certainly, I think we're all aligned in wanting to put a stop to this and making sure that people recognise that this cannot happen. I don't know whether this is just a blip or whether actually maybe whether there's a change in reporting standards or anything like that, but you know, good to know what's driving.
No, and sometimes reporting, once an element of reporting starts, it becomes more common for people to report. Almost the tolerance for reporting changes. So I think what I will do on that is I will have a chat to Jill Gibson. I'll read the actual detailed reports of what took place, and then at the next meeting, we haven't got a report due on this, but if it looks concerning and over the last couple of months this level's continued, we'll have a special report back.
Otherwise, are both of those items noted? Excellent. Human resources statistics, quarter 2.
Thank you. So page 19, agenda item 7. This details vacancy, staff turnover, sickness, absence data, and the exit interviews up to the 30th of September 2018 are included. The leavers are detailed on page 19. We also details those posts that have been advertised during this, the quarter up to the end of September. It was only fixed-term contracts that were advertised due to the recruitment freeze that's in place. Sickness information's on page 22. We're down for that quarter to 1.51 days per employee. It's the lowest since 14-15. I do note some caution there, however, because since this point in time we have started to go more deeply into our transformation, more staff being affected, so we may see an increase in the next quarter. Compliance is also improving on attendance management and managers completing relevant paperwork and targeted work with those not completing the relevant documentation. Page 26 details the reasons for leaving the council. Page 27 showing that the large number of people would return to work for the council. And the main factor for people leaving was job satisfaction. But overall, the factors and reasons for people leaving were spread across a number of them.
Members, any questions? Councillor Beale.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When are we going to have the number of people that are required in the new regime, as you might say? Because at the moment, we're all based on the old figures, aren't we? And who's going to be made redundant is going to be assessed. But how close are we getting down to the new figures that we need for our staffing?
So we are very close to the figures that we need for our staffing, probably within five. But what we've got to remember, this was reported to full council actually at the last full council meeting. It was reported within a private session, so there's only limited information that I'm able to give at this point to you. But we're very, very close to where we were. But the key thing is making sure we've got the right people in the right places with the right skills.
Councillor Harker, did you have a question? Okay, Councillor Hurd.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I noticed the eight resignations. Can I just ask, were they planned at all? Were they expected?
I don't know whether resignations are ever expected. Well, I guess sometimes they are, but not frequently.
The reason that I ask is that with the recruitment freeze and the number of resignations, are we confident that we can still carry on with business as usual? Is there any cover? Are these people going immediately, or are they working out notices? And is there any shadowing of those posts? Until the new system is implemented, we'll be working the old system with less people. So my question is, can we be confident that we're able to do business as usual?
We've got a detailed transition plan in place, and I believe that Ms. Thane will be talking to members on transition in future months, actually, just to detail that and to give you more information on that transition plan so that you've got it. But overall, CLT are regularly meeting with the leader and with other members to really talk about our resilience, both as a CLT and as the remaining organisation, to make sure that we're able to meet the performance indicators that we need to.
Okay, Councillor Mrs. Acevedo.
Thank you, Chairman. I think this is quite positive, the absence levels being so low, when of course the system isn't in place yet, I understand, but there is uncertainty, there's a lot of uncertainty, and to see this, the absent levels this low, I think is very, very positive. So I'm hoping that that's because it's being dealt with in the best manner possible.
I hope so. Anything else? Is that report noted? Excellent. So on to item 8, half-yearly review of performance.
Thank you. So half-yearly review of performance, page 39. There's a covering report at the front, and then on page 39 we go into the detailed report showing all of the indicators and performance against targets. I don't propose to go through all of the detail in the report, but to take questions from members. Mr. Holmes is also here this evening if there's any areas relating to service delivery.
I think, members, this report goes to all the committees, right? So, obviously the ones that relate
to
finance. Any questions that relate to finance are particularly pertinent. Councillor Hurd.
Well, it really sort of harks back to the previous agenda item, because I noticed there was quite a considerable amount being spent on agency staff presumably to cover, I think it was 116, I think it was 116,000, wasn't it, I think, if I remember rightly. So, again, looking at these, I see that the majority of them are behind schedule or at risk in the main. There's only a few patches of green. Once again, you know, are we satisfied that we're able to provide this business as usual? Because these are indicating that we're not.
I think that's just because of the stage of the project we're at the moment. Yes. But Ms. Foy?
Which areas particularly are you referring to?
Well, I'm looking at the general picture. Most of them are orange or red. There's only a few spurts of green there, so which means that they're either at risk. So this is just a general point. Okay. You know, are we falling behind?
So, Councillor Hurd, overall at this meeting, we look at the ones which pertain to this committee. So the ones with the yellow arrow. So the housing benefit and council tax benefit claims, we've discussed at overview and scrutiny committee, but happy to take any questions on this.
No, I've spoken at overview and scrutiny, thank you.
Councillor Dodson.
Thank you, Chairman. It was discussed at quite some length, but I think it's important that members of the committee understand it's always page 55 on the benefits and council tax support, where it's gone from 10.72 days in 2017-18 to cumulative predicted, I think, 33.9, and obviously where we've got universal credit coming in, which we don't know when it's going to come. I think this committee should keep a very close eye on that one. Is it progressive for the system?
Anything else, members? Is that report noted? Okay, very good. Item 9, the Royal Settlement List, which is something that comes to us every year and which we have to sign off.
Yes, it's just the list on page 63 of all of our rural settlements. There are no changes since last year.
Is that agreed? Excellent. Item 10, supplementary estimates.
Thank you, Chairman. This report starts on page 65 of the pack. It's requesting approval for one fireman and advising members of two procurement exemptions that were granted in the period. Members are not asked to give advance approval for any underspends, including salary underspends, to be vied to a central code for expense associated with the future model. The procurement exemptions relate to a network upgrade, where the exemption was required to use the incumbent supplier, and the other exemption is to procure business continuity support from a local authority with similar risks to our own, for an interim period following the end of the existing contract.
Members, are those agreed? Those recommendations agreed? Excellent. Item 11, you're in the hot seat, Ian.
Okay, our half-yearly Treasury Management Report for Ms. Foy to present.
Thank you. So page 69, six-monthly Treasury Management Update showing the investment activity for the first 6 months of the year. In summary, we are forecasting approximately 21,000 income above budget. This is partly due to the higher levels of balances invested, but also members may recall that you took a decision to be able to invest in the Investec Diversified Income Fund probably about maybe 7 or 8 months ago, and that's got an interest return of 4.03%. So positive returns there. Property fund 3.18%, and our standard short-term investments at 0.54. So really, I think the report overall, for noting that coming in slightly above budget on that.
Positive story. Any questions from members? Noted. Thank you.
I think we're going to get 2% on that.
Okay, members. Item 12, budgetary control, April to September 2018.
Thank you, Chairman. This report starts on page 77 of the pack. It looks at the expenditure against budget to the end of quarter two. The key variances from Appendix 1A are detailed on pages 79 and 80. The biggest areas of variance relate to salary underspends of £263,000, which are due to the high level of vacancies. There's lower income on waste recycling due to the decline in the market and lower than budgeted planning income. The capital programme is currently 37.5% complete, and all projects are currently anticipated to be completed in this financial year, with the exception of the super fast broadband, which, following a decision at Council, will be contributed to Essex in December 2019 on achievement of some set performance measures.
If they occur. Members, any comments? Is that report noted? Oh, okay. On to the corporate debt recovery strategy. Is that one for you, Ms. Foy?
Yes, thank you, Tim. So page 93, let's just move along. Page 93, with the strategy itself at page 97. So this strategy has been prepared by Ms. Greenwood, who's here tonight. Thank you very much, Ms. Greenwood. And what it does is it updates our previous strategy, but really the key change is a provision for us to really very carefully consider different enforcement actions, such as bankruptcy and committal. And that's something that we haven't really ever used or looked at before. Our peer councils have got these processes in place, and therefore we've brought this tonight to members' attention to approve as part of the new strategy.
And members, as members know, you know, there have been a number of situations over the past few years where, you know, debts haven't been recovered for whatever reason, and so it's important that the council has, you know, the full toolkit available to go after corporate debts. So I think in that way this is a big improvement. But Councillor Mrs. Acevedo.
Thank you, Chairman. 2.10 on page 104, use of external collection agencies. I'd just like to know a little bit more about the costings on this and where it is of use to us, and where it becomes of use to us financially, because it doesn't seem to be terribly self-explanatory there. I know some of it is covered actually in appendix 1 on page 106, but I'd like maybe the lady that did, I'm so sorry I can't remember your name, I didn't get it, but maybe you could just explain a little bit more about that. Is that all right, Chairman?
Yes, by
thank
all
you
means.
Of course. The external collection agents that we use, the fees, they're mainly for council tax and business rate non-payers. The fees are completely statutory, so the council doesn't actually get any costs for that. It is the charge payer that will pick up the statutory fees if a case goes to them. We do send a few sundry debts to the collection agents, and they go out with different powers, but we have negotiated a 0% commission fee, so we pay no commission at all on those. The reason why they do this, because you may think, well, why do they do this for nothing, is because they really want the council tax cases, because council tax cases with the volumes are more, and it's important to the collection agents to have the contract for council tax and business rates, because potentially there are more fees there that they can claim from the customer. But these fees went through a massive change back in 2010 with the Ministry of Justice, where they brought in different legislation to completely look at that fee structure. So the fees are absolutely statutory and set in stone, and they're the same across the board, so they can't be changed at all.
Thank you. Very good explanation. There's just one more thing. Well, clearly it's not costing us as a council any money, and so it appears that it's very good. But later on in the report you do say about, or actually I think it, anyway, it's here somewhere, about vulnerable people. And these collection agents, I'd like to be assured, or how can we be sure that they're not real bully boys and frightening the vulnerable?
Ms. Greenwood.
Okay. We go through stringent strategies when we look at using collection agents. We also network with local authorities throughout the country to look at, there's quite a few, they're actually called certificated bailiffs, and there are a number of them that deal with local authorities and public sector, and that's what their speciality is. They also have welfare teams set up within the company, so that if a case has got through us and they haven't contacted us for whatever reason, that if they contact the enforcement agent and there is clearly an issue regarding vulnerability, that those cases are put on hold. We also have quarterly meetings with the enforcement agents to make sure that any of these cases are raised at those meetings, and they are often, we then look at them, we get them to come in, and we try to do some active recovery with them here, rather than and call them back from the enforcement agent. We have to use our skills to see whether there is an issue with vulnerability and how best to proceed. We want to be helping those that can't pay, but we also want to put robust measures in place for those that won't pay, because they are a completely different category of person.
Thank you. Councillor Dobson.
Thank you, Chairman. It's on 2.11 again, the vulnerable customers. I think the list there is quite subjective, the list of the reasons why and the definition of disabled person, serious illness, etc., which I get why it has to be like that. But what's the internal governance process around enforcement and instructing whether we're not going to go to debt collection or we are? Can you just explain what the internal sign-off process is? Down to individual officers? Does it go through some sort of authorisation process?
Ms. Greenwood. Thank you.
We go through, for council tax and business rates, we have to go through a legislative requirement of documents that we send out prior to it going to the enforcement agent anyway. And there is also some intervention with the officers before we send any case to the enforcement agent. So they will go through cases, and because they deal with those cases on a regular basis, they often pick up names that have come up before that have got vulnerability issues, etc. So they do stringent checks to make sure that the cases are cases that should really go. We also have other remedies. Once we get a liability order in the court, we have other remedies that we can use, such as detachment of earnings and deductions from certain benefits. So we will look at using those as well before we send them to the enforcement agent. So what we want to be doing is using the right remedy for the right cases.
Councillor Hurd.
Could I just ask, the external collection agencies, are they the last resort?
They're not the last resort. They're one of the remedies that we have once we have a liability order. For council tax and business rates, the last resort really is either bankruptcy, liquidation if it's a business, or committal to prison. They're the last resort remedies.
Councillor Foucault.
Page 106, when I get that there. 2.1.4. Where it starts all write-offs. Is the scheme and delegation in place and has ever been agreed by this committee? Because I don't recall ever seeing it. And I don't actually recall seeing it in the Constitution.
I think it is in the Constitution.
And the other thing that I find a bit odd is 2.1.4, paragraph 4, where we write off debts but we reserve the right to resurrect them in the future. I mean, if we don't take any action on the debt, I think there's case law on this now saying that you can't, you know, if you don't pursue a debt for so many years, you can't suddenly start pursuing it. And I always find that the easiest thing with all these things is go to the small claims court, pay your 68 quid, and then just sit back and hopefully one day that person will apply for a loan or a mortgage or something else, and then all of a sudden get your money back because they want that removed. But I'd like to know about the scheme of delegation. I can hear you whispering that it is in the Constitution, but I think the scheme of delegation is right and proper for us to understand and see.
Yeah, so I'll bring that to the next meeting. You're correct in terms of debts becoming statute barred if the correct action isn't taken. I think on this one, this also reflects the wishes of this committee, which I think when we were talking about a debt attached to a boat one of the points that we raised in the past is that we would be careful to give credit to those in the future that had debts in the past.
But I think also that that item is making, or 2.14 is making clear that we can go after those debts later on if we choose to, despite the fact they've been written off, so long as we're not statute barred, okay? And I think hopefully members are comfortable that in relation to the other items, this increases the kind of availability of the toolkit, but at the same time, attention is given to vulnerable customers. Councillor Mrs. Acevedo.
Thank you, Chairman. Page 106, the second bullet point, the balance outstanding with the expenses of covering the terms of fees, staffing time, and if it's not viable. When or where do, you know, if these people are not paying their fees and they know that it's going to cost us more money, and clearly if they're regularly not paying their debts, then they're probably aware of this. So are we just letting them off then in this particular example because it's too expensive for us to actually get that money back? It's the second bullet point on page 106.
I think it's very unusual that I ever have a case put in front of me to write off due to the cost of collection being higher than the write-off. So from my experience of being here for the last sort of 15 or 16 months, I think I've had two
of those cases. So if there was a pattern to it, then the council would decide to
But I can do a further report on debt write-offs
in
the next meeting.
Okay. Okay. Councillor Beale?
If it's decided a person goes to prison, does that mean to say the debt is written off?
Yes, Ms Greenwood. Thank you.
It's not technically written off, but you can't pursue it down any other route, so you would have to write the debt off. Obviously, if you wanted to do committal action for, there's only a few debts that you can do. That's for council tax mainly. You would have to do stringent checks to make sure that person, there is no reason why that person can't pay. You would look at everything first. You'd look at to see whether they're working, whether you can take a deduction from their earnings or benefits first. You wouldn't go down that route unless it was a last resort. And no, it's not technically written off, but you just can't recover it in any other way. So once you've got to that, that's the end of the line for that debt.
Okay, is the recommendation agreed, members? Excellent. On to the local council tax support scheme, which again comes to us every year.
Yes, so agenda item 14, page 117. This is almost unchanged from the previous year, with the exception of cost of living increases applied for pensions and some change in legislation to reflect the housing benefit scheme going over to universal credit. The equality impact analysis has been provided on page 121.
And importantly, before we recommend this to council, it's incumbent on me just to make sure that members have read Appendix 1 and given regard to the equality impact assessment, because that's an important part of this overall report. So is that recommendation agreed?
Agreed.
Excellent. On to 2019-20 budgetary proposals.
Thank you, Chairman. This report starts on page 129 and is also the addendum that was sent out on Monday. This report details the proposals for inclusion in the 2019-20 budget. Page 129 onwards includes the basis of some of the key assumptions currently included in the medium-term financial strategy, including council tax, investment income and the collection fund income. The appendices from page 135 onwards detail the new items proposed for the inclusion in the budget. The community services and planning and licensing committees have seen the items that are relevant to them ahead of this meeting. Appendix A on page 135 details the growth bids. The total of bids is 108,700, 83,400 of which relates to the election in May and is one-off. Appendix B on page 137 is replaced by the addendum document. This was updated following feedback from the programme committees. Members raised some queries on the proposed wharfage and mooring policies for responses to be brought to this meeting. There was a query on the collection of mooring fees. And this is to clarify that we are not requesting any change to collection arrangements, only that the fee charged will no longer be set depending on the fees of local clubs. A question was raised on inserting a clause in leases about prohibiting subleasing. We wouldn't be able to adjust existing leases, but could discuss with legal whether this would be possible for future leases. And there was a suggestion that charity concessions for river wharfage are agreed between the director and chair of P&L. Concerns were raised over the impact of the removal of a 50% wharfage fees discount and what this would have on the Thames barges in the estuary. Therefore, the policy is now to be retained, with officers to carry out further work as part of service reviews, discussing options and meeting with barge owners to consider removal of that discount over a phased period. The other change in the addendum is to the concession for household waste collection. The NHS are withdrawing their disposal service. Therefore, to prevent the council seeing an increase in cost, it is proposed to remove the free clinical waste collection and instead signpost to commercial providers. There were no other concerns raised with any of the changes proposed at the committees, and there are no changes to policies in the Resources Directorate. Appendix C on page 143 details the capital bids, which amount to £143,200. These are mainly for new grounds maintenance equipment to replace failing equipment and will be necessary for any new commercial works. There is also a bid for works at the Malden Cemetery Trapel for their foundations, and it will be subject to a future report. Finally, on Appendix D on page 153, these are the requests for funds from the Repairs and New Renewals Reserve that total £117,000. These are all one-off works required to maintain some of the Council's strategic assets. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms Cox. It's probably worth going through this appendix by appendix, if members agree. So should we look at Appendix A first of all, and any comments on Appendix A? It's page 135. Yeah. It hasn't actually got a page number on it in my version, but yes, 135. Have you found it, Councillor Fluker? Fantastic. I seem to have got there first with the paper version. Members, Councillor Harker.
On page 135, fourth one down, what on earth does a waste education officer do?
Ms. Cox. Oh, sorry. Mr. Holmes.
Evening, members. We employ staff within our waste team. Part of our strategy to waste minimisation, it's about ensuring that people understand what's recyclable, what's not recyclable. That helps us obviously with the collection, so we avoid rejection of waste that's collected from the curbside. So education basically, education programmes, telling the customers what they can recycle, what they can't recycle, deal with issues that are arising from those particular matters.
Sadly, it's not to do with the
can
council's money.
Can I just ask a supplementary?
Wasted.
Does the amount of money that you pay in landfill tax more than the cost of the $4,700 for the post? You know, does it balance itself out? In the waste reduction, you save so much a tonne going to landfill. Does all that lot equal $4,700 or more? Otherwise, you might as well not do it.
Chairman, I believe it does. I don't have the definitive figures in front of me. So I believe it does, and I think probably usefully knowing that going into the phase two of the future model, then this will be picked up as part of the casework from a number of officers. So this is kind of the old system as we're going in, and these funds are basically to bridge the gap between now and October 2019 when we actually work towards the new model.
So are those, Councillor Mrs. Acevedo?
I'm so sorry. I'd just like to know, please, where does this person do this educating?
Chairman, so that would be online. So obviously we make sure our web presence, and we'll also deal with individual customers. We'll also work with the contractor. So if they're rejecting collection from curbside, then we'll actually work with the individual customer to explain why their load has kind of been rejected and helping them to get it right.
Okay, are the growth items in Appendix A agreed? Excellent. Appendix B. Any comments on those?
137.
137, Councillor Fluker. This is actually the addendum, isn't it?
Right,
Appendix B.
There's a
separate set of charges on the
Yes, Councillor Dawson. So it's page 3 on that, so I don't know what is in the main agenda.
Yes, the same.
Is it the same?
Yeah, okay. That's the one up on the screen.
So I got a kick in last year for the permits in the prom get going under the covers, and I think it went in the paper as well. So halfway through, one, two, three, four, fifth one down, customer communities, car parking events, a new one, suspend car parking, introduce a set fee for specific events. Charges will depend on the event size and entrance fee to be determined by the head of paid service delivery. A bit more information on that?
Chairman, yes, we're looking at Prom Park and obviously making sure that we can make it run as efficiently as possible. There have been a number of large events, the car show, Smoke and Fire would be a good example, where the park has reached capacity and the majority of people are actually there parking for the event itself. It would make cash collection, it would make customers' kind of experience simpler if there was a one-off fee for car parking for the day. So we'd suspend the kind of 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hours, and to say if you're parking on the park for this event for the day, there will be a set fee. Obviously that fee has not been decided, as to say, which would actually simplify the cash collection, and obviously for the motorist not have to come back and forth to the car. And obviously we would publicise that there are other town centre car park spaces available, as most events are on Sundays, so there's another 500 or so spaces available within a 10-minute walk or so.
And if people aren't paying, Mr. Holmes, into cash machines, but people just paying an individual or something, then how is that policed from a fraud perspective?
I don't believe we would collect by hand. It would always be by the machine. Well, hopefully the machinery would be able to cope with that. Maybe a change in tariff, one button to press, so they could have a single fee. So that's what we're looking at trying to introduce.
Okay. Members, any other comments on Appendix B? Are those agreed? Excellent. Appendix C, the capital project bids. Correct. Are those agreed? Councillor Fluker.
Chairman, we're on Appendix C.
We are. Page 143.
Just in case my friend, the Vice Chairman of Southminster Parish Council, forgets to mention this, but can we make sure, Chairman, that when we go through the disposal process, the Parish Councillors are invited to tender, and in particular the Southminster Parish Council as well, because I think they're very keen to buy some of this old, defunct equipment.
Well, I think we should make it. We should make sure that all the Parish Councillors are aware that we're putting it up for sale and sell it to the highest bidder. Councillor Beale.
This goes back about 15 years or more when Mr. Eckhart was the Treasurer, when it was agreed it would be always brought onto agendas every year, and it hasn't been put there for a few years now.
Councillor Dobson.
So I've completely lost myself, but I know it's in there somewhere about the splash park. Just a quick. Here we go. Page 160. I'll say Appendix D. Sorry.
I'm completely lost. You're ahead of yourself.
So,
do we agree the capital projects, the small number of capital projects in Appendix C?
Agreed.
Okay, and now on to Appendix D, the repairs and renewals projects. Councillor Dobson.
Thank you, Chairman. So, the splash park on page 160.
Thank you.
Which I do fully support, obviously. But it's just a quick question. It's £85,000 given the life of the splash park. I think it's about 10 years old now. Are we to expect these kind of maintenance costs to go up? And that was shut quite a bit in the summer. It was fortunate that we exceed our revenue, but are we expecting extra revenue over the coming years for the splash park?
I'm guessing that's probably one for Mr. Holmes again.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, obviously, it's a cyclical cost. It's a tarmac surface that is replaced. It's become porous, and it obviously there's some porosity because let the water through to the plant equipment, but it's actually having a detrimental effect now. It only has a finite life. I think it's about 7 or 8 years since this surface was replaced, so it is on a rolling cyclical basis. Obviously, that's the budget provision. We'll go out to full procurement, and obviously, if we can improve upon that price, but that would suggest to be the best price that we would, or the price that the estimate is correct at this time. In terms of it bringing additional revenue, no, it is just simply the surface of the existing splash park, but we have been working quite hard to stretch the season. We've had a really good year. The weather year has been very positive. We've been offered longer opening hours into the summer evenings. We've had more parties that have actually booked it. So that's the way we look to increase our revenue income.
Councillor Shimpton.
Could I ask, Mr. Chairman, Prom Park entrance, as far as I know, there's three entrances to Prom Park. Which one is having to be repaired?
I think this is the main one, is it not, Mr. Holmes?
The one at the bottom, the one at the big one, Hill Road corner.
Ch- Chairman. I think it's
the main one.
It's the main
one. It's got great big gates and...
Well, I think that, I mean, I'm interested to know where the other entrances are, actually.
There's one right down at the end, which goes to the maintenance area, and then there's one to the into the car park, and there's one into the park itself. The one in the park itself has got the brick piers on either side and the big wrought iron gates. The next one is the one you come off on the corner of Mill Road, and the other one is right down South Drive.
Mr. Holmes, can you shed some light on this? Sorry, Chairman, I'm just reading the detail sheet to be absolutely clear. My understanding is it would be the main entrance, the main vehicular entrance. I think what member was talking about was the old prom entrance gates, which are off of Mill Road. Obviously, I think the roadway we're talking about is off of Park Drive itself, so it's the main vehicular entrance. Yeah.
It's really
okay. We
okay, are those agreed in Appendix D? Excellent. Okay, on to item 16, council tax proposals to increase empty homes premium.
Thank you, Chair. So page 165, in November, on the 1st of November 18, new legislation was approved enabling council tax premium to increase to act as a disincentive for properties to be empty. So 3.32 shows the legislative table, which you can build the maximum premium chargeable up to 300% if a property has been unoccupied for 10 years. And we've got this report coming now in November so that we could start doing this from April.
Members, that agreed? Excellent. And item 17, introduction of a charge for some of the car park here. Mr. Holmes.
Chairman, thank you. Yes, this report looks to members for guidance regarding the council office car park itself. If I'll take you straight to Appendix A, which we can show you the area of car park we're talking about to make you familiar. So you'll see on the Appendix A a plan of the council office car park outlined in red, and you'll see some parking spaces which are coloured in blue. Those are the visitor spaces to the council offices. Increasingly, these car parking spaces have been used by the general public for a number of reasons. It could well be for shopping, it could well be for visiting doctor's surgeries or other nearby houses or facilities. And this report is looking to convert these spaces into a general car park in line with all of our other car parks, which are chargeable. So this report is seeking your agreement to convert those spaces at the front of the offices into a standard car park with parking charges applicable Monday to Friday during office hours. And as a reminder, the whole of the car park outlined in red is a public car park on a Saturday and Sunday. And that is the report, Chairman.
I personally think this is a good idea to regularise the parking in the car park here, because at the moment some people want to park but aren't sure whether they can do or not. And actually, I think, although, you know, there'll obviously be some people who object about having to pay, I think there'll be other people who are quite happy about being able to park here legitimately and use it as a pay and display car park in that way. And so I personally think it's a good idea. But members, Councillor Mrs. Acevedo.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I do too. And it's an extra 15,000 to 20,000, is that correct? I believe it said.
Potentially, Chairman, yes, if we fill those
fantastic
spaces.
Fantastic. I don't see a problem with this at all.
Councillor Hurd.
Just a question. Are these bays going to be signed as different to the other parts? And the other question is, on the where the electric charging point is at the moment, I think anyone... I think it's currently a disabled spot, but anyone with an electric car can park there for free. Should this be also included?
Mr. Hurd?
Holmes.
Mr. Holmes, sorry.
Chairman, yes, as part of the scheme, we will be introducing power display equipment and also the necessary signage, because it has to be done to the proper order. So, yes, it will. You're absolutely right at the moment, because the whole car park is free at the front of the building there. That's where the electric charging point is. We could include that space within there, or we could actually relocate that piece of equipment. I haven't got an answer for you this evening, but I think we could take that away as a consideration.
Councillor Harker. Sorry, I think, and I'll come to Councillor Fluker.
Yes, sorry.
Or the head of paid service. Councillor Fluker.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, a couple of points really that Mr. Haynes might like to just take on board when he's speaking. I've noticed, Chairman, that I know that within the terms of the lease, I think the police service have 5 allocated places. But I'm also very conscious of the fact that their staff and their customers use quite a few other bays in that area. And I hope that we're...
Should I just declare an interest at this,
okay,
at this point?
Sure, you can't then.
Non-pecuniary.
Sorry, you use the members' card, but I think it's free under my new scheme. I just want to be absolutely sure that if we're going to charge, then maybe it should be extended to them so that their staff pay for their parking. And perhaps their civilian staff as well. And the other thing is, Chairman, much of this comes back to a project known as Saint Saints, where you remove the old Saint Saints and you know the history about the budget and everything else. But part of that project was the fact that Longfield's medical centre were going to take a long-term agreement on some of these cars. Spaces, and I just hope that through this process, Mr. Holmes will approach them and ask them if they'd like to take on some of these car park spaces which are hatched in turquoise on a long-term basis for their customers. Question mark.
Chairman, yes, absolutely. We obviously will be writing to both of the surgeries as part of this consultation and advising of the changes. Their customers may be affected by this proposal, and that is a conversation we can have. With regard to the police and their parking spaces, the spaces that are in the St. Sed's car park should be permitted, as should the remaining spaces, Monday to Friday, within the car park. We will ensure that the enforcement takes the necessary action. So my view is, if you've got a permit and you're authorised to park in the car park, or you're paying in the blue turquoise, otherwise you'll be getting a ticket.
So just for clarification, Mr. Holmes, when you say a permit, is this a day permit or this a long-term permit? If it's a long-term permit issued to the police, are they going to pay for them, other than for the 5 that they've already got for their police cars?
Chairman, I believe the police should have the 5 spaces that they're paying for. If there's anybody else in that car park without a... And I don't think we're permitting those. They have 5 spaces. I'm just looking to Mr. Foy to confirm that.
Yeah, 5 marked car spaces.
5, exactly. So I believe that everybody else should either have a permit, and if the police are using more spaces than they're paying for, they will actually probably receive an enforcement notice, a ticket, because they're not authorised to use that car park.
Sorry, Chairman, maybe I didn't ask the question properly. So if the police have a permit... In addition to their 5 car parking spaces, they have to pay for those permits.
Yes.
That's correct. Okay, is this proposal agreed? Councillor Beale.
The other night I came here and found that the police are parking not necessarily in their own areas, but anywhere in the car park that was St. Sed's. Is that acceptable, taking consideration they got 5 positions further on, which some were empty?
Yeah, that has been happening in the evenings, and we have reported it to the facilities manager at the police again. During the day, they stick to their 5 spaces along the side. It's when there's not other cars in the car park in the evenings, they kind of park closer to the building.
I don't think that's a problem. I mean, I think we have to be sensible about this, how it's enforced. Okay, members, is that agreed? Yeah. Excellent. Okay, and any other items of business? There are none, so I close the meeting at 8:20.